Clint's mama told me he used to strut around when he was a high school star wearing a banana hammock.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily.
I do like to have a good time. I like to have a party, but that was an absolute...
And a banana hammock?
There's a lot of things your boy has done, but strut around in a banana hammock is not one of them.
I can't imagine the General John McClane lying about something like that. Man.
I'm just telling you, he's lying about it. I mean, I've been around the world and back, and but I ain't never done none of that. I've never been talked into any of that right there. And I mean, there's been a couple.
Yet.
There's been a few of them that could have talked me into some things now, but that old banana hammock strutting around, it ain't happening now.
Well, so. Sorry.
Just going to let y'all, I'm going to let y'all know. All right, we're out here at Big City Wings Fall Creek in Humble, Fall Creek location. Come on through right here off Beltway 8, Sam Houston Parkway. Y'all come on through and hang. Sean Bajani is in for Ron Hughley today. And it is a Football Friday. Big shout out to Academy Sports and Outdoors. We just gave away a $25 gift card. We just gave away some U of H tickets to
took a little bit.
Utah or Kansas State. Yeah.
You got to be here to win, people.
I mean, I don't even know if I should do this. I may get written up. But I'm going to tell you. Ashley Valdez. Jason Marshall. V.A. What? How do you say Granny's last name?
Nortz.
V.A. Nortz. Michael De La Torre. Diana Morgan, I don't know what y'all had to run out of here so quick for.
Man, was that six?
But I hope it was I hope it was worth $25 at Academy Sports and Outdoors. I don't know what you needed, but I guarantee you $25 would have went a long way for you at Academy Sports and Outdoors.
They have prices always, you love.
They got prices that you love. did I say your name too? Ash, I started you. I take Ashley back, everybody out there. Ashley, she's handling
Ashley.
Business here. Sorry, Ashley. I hope you don't
she's
mind.
She's the one that stuck it out and got it.
Oh, well, I knew I'd get in trouble. Hell, I got in trouble before I even got it out of
my
mouth.
When are we doing the big dog? When are we doing that $1,000 one?
No, we're not doing that. That's you register online. That's down the road.
Damn it, okay,
Johnny. Register here.
I was going to say.
You thought we were pulling.
I don't know. I'm just here, man.
Hey, if I had $1,000,
I was just going to let the people know, like, don't leave.
Hey, Chief, if we had $1,000 and two tickets to the suite on Christmas Day versus the Baltimore Ravens, this place would be full, Chief.
Okay.
It should be. They don't trust me with stuff like that. I get $25 gift cards. They put a cap on me. I'll be trying to work that $1,000 deal at Academy now. You better believe it. All right, I want to talk a little college football, man. The college football slate is it's a good one this week. But before we get into that, I do want to show a little love to our partners over at the Texas Bowl. I've been a part of the Texas Bowl for 3 or 4 years. I actually called on radio a couple of Texas Bowls. I'm on the board now, I don't know how they accepted me on the board, but they did, and it's the only board I'm on ever been on. So, but it's a great group. They do great things. They announced their 2024 class of Gridiron Legends this morning, and the Gridiron Legends that's always pretty impressive, but this is an impressive group. These guys will be honored pregame at the Texas Bowl on December the 31st. Check this out. Eric Dickerson,
mm-hmm.
John Randall, James Francis, Tony Franklin, and Tony Heath. I mean, they got a hell of a group going
awesome.
In that they're honoring. And if you're a college football fan, you need to check this game out, man. This is Houston supports the hell out of this game. They usually sell a ton of tickets. Obviously, it depends on the proximity. It's an SEC Big 12 matchup. And so it's always a really, really good game. And this is a fun event. They got a lot of really cool stuff surrounding the game. So if you're looking for something to do, December the 31st, where it's not getting out, getting loose at a New Year's Eve party, it's watching a little football and being somewhat tame, this is the spot to go. There ain't no doubt about it. The Texas Bowl is big time. And big time congrats to the Texas Texas Bowl Gridiron Legends. That's a hell of an honor right there, man. All right, there's, again, that slate of college football games. Let me run down it real quick. We got to start with the Texas-OU Red River rivalry. This game is probably a little bit more lopsided from a line perspective than it has been. I don't recall the last time that a line was 14.5 in a Texas-Oklahoma
game. Yeah, that'd be something interesting to look up, actually.
Well, it's 14.5. I mean, Texas is obviously one of, if not the best team in the country. And OU has – I haven't watched a ton of OU this year, but they have sputtered, to say the least. And they are – they can play spoiler in this game. Texas OU, Texas minus 14.5. Sean, you like the Longhorns in that one? Or
I like the Longhorns. Now, are we talking about against the spread?
Yeah,
like,
we're going spread.
Real quick, boys, just to note what y'all were discussing, I'm still looking up some other stats and facts on this, but this is the very first time that the Texas Longhorns have been double-digit favorites in the Red River rivalry.
I actually see the contrary, Tyler. I just looked it up myself. According to the Oklahoman from a few days ago, it says Texas was a 14-point favorite against Oklahoma in the 2005.
Ah, first time since 05. Yeah, I see that now.
Damn it, Tyler!
That game in 2005, the Longhorns beat the Sooners 45-12. So easily covering the spread. Are we going to get that iteration of the Longhorns when they've been double-digit favorites?
I don't know. I don't know what. Look, I mean, you're talking about a 5-0 team versus a 4-1 team, and yeah, as I said, the Oklahoma Sooners have not been as powerful and as well oiled as they have recently, or in the recent past, I guess.
Isn't Texas still hemming and hawing over who they're going to start at quarterback too?
Ain't no way.
There's no way they're hemming and hawing.
No, ain't no way. I mean, unless is Uwe still is he still hurt?
I thought I was hearing chirps about Arch.
Nah, you know, yeah, you're gonna hear chirps. That's about all you're gonna hear. There ain't no, that's Quinn Ewers' football team, man. I like Texas big in this game. I think OU could play spoiler. OU's got one loss, and they've got a, you know, with this new 12-team playoff, if you get to two losses, you could be in trouble. I think there's going to be some two-loss teams get in, obviously, but but you get to two losses this early in the season, you could be in trouble. So I think OU is really trying to hold it together from a college football playoff perspective. If they lose this weekend, I got to believe that it would ultimately be a long shot on it with an SEC schedule. And so, unfortunately, they're catching Texas.
I'm going to go OU to cover.
Oh, wow.
Texas with the win, OU to cover.
Tyler, where you at?
I'm telling Bajani, I'm taking OU plus 14.5.
I shouldn't even ask. I should have known that.
It's guaranteed. It's easy money.
I should have known that. How about that's the only game. Oh, now you might throw Tyler a little bit.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
And we might need to talk about that later. Bajani's presented a business opportunity we might need to talk about later.
That was when you were really hot, though. You've cooled off a little bit. I'm going to have to reconsider. Now your ass is tailing me. We got a problem.
You know, I'm looking at these games, though. Texas and OU is a neutral side, obviously. I'm looking at all these other games, and it is the home team getting points in every single one of these games, with the exception of Texas OU, which is neutral, right? Penn State at USC, Penn State minus 3.5. So SC at home getting more than a field goal. Florida at Tennessee. Tennessee minus 14. That one's in Knoxville, so that one doesn't qualify, but you're still 14. It's a big spread. OSU at Oregon. Ohio State is getting 3. I'm sorry, it's giving up 3.
Mm-hmm.
So you got Oregon at home plus 3. Ole Miss at LSU. LSU plus 3.5 at home. K-State at Colorado. Colorado 3.5, plus 3.5 at home.
I like a
home team getting points, Tyler. I really like a home team getting points. Yeah. The one I like the most out of this off of this list right here. This is my lock, Tyler. You got your deal pulled up.
I got it pulled up. I'm ready. Fingers ready to go.
I need $100 on this. Ole Miss at LSU.
I knew it.
Ole Miss at LSU, and I'm gonna surprise you. I want LSU plus 3.5.
Woo! All right, I'll lock it in.
I want LSU plus 3.5. I watched Ole Miss just roll over for Kentucky. And I like Mark Stoops. Kentucky's a dangerous football team year in, year out. They're always gonna sneak up and potentially get a top ranked team. But I don't think Ole Miss is as good as everybody thinks they are.
You're officially locked in, sir. 107 to risk. Damn, 100.
I could be wrong on it, which I've been known to be wrong from time to time. But I like LSU at home in Death Valley.
I'm going to tell you on that, too.
In Death Valley getting 3.5 versus Ole Miss.
So the upsets continue. We had about 5 or 6 of them last weekend. You're thinking LSU gets these points. You get a 13 upset and a 9.
Yeah.
I could totally see that, though. That would probably be the one that I would pick. I told you just right now, I like the Colorado-Kansas State game. Colorado's only 3.5-point underdogs at home. And I think Kansas State is what? Still in the top 20?
Yeah.
I believe. I think they are 20. That would be my number 2 pick, man. We've talked about this before on this show with Hunter being a front runner or one of the front runners, I'll say, for the Heisman. I mean, there just ain't no stopping that cat. And at home, Colorado's just a different beast at home than they are. This is a big game for them. I told you, this is an opportunity for him particularly to show out. But all those Deion haters out there, they got an opportunity to upset a ranked opponent for the first time this season.
Yeah.
Let's go. I'm going to take Colorado.
The dogs.
Who you like in that game, T?
Not Colorado. Not prime. No. Yeah,
I hate to do it to you, Sean, but
it's all good.
He doesn't like Colorado. Texas OU Red River rivalry. Penn State at USC. Florida at Tennessee. OSU at Oregon. Ole Miss at LSU. And K-State at Colorado. It's going to be a hell of a Saturday. I know I'll be glued in to two different TVs, trying to keep an eye on as many of those as I can. I also really like USC at home catching 3.5, by the way. Just putting it out there, those are my two. LSU at home catching 3.5 and USC at home catching 3.5. And I do like Texas. I'm not betting it because that's a huge number in a rivalry game versus a 4-1 football team. It's a huge number, 14.5. But I do like Texas to win and cover that.
That's going to be fun. That's a night game always, right?
Don't have the times in front of me. Don't have the times in front of me. All right, that's Sean Bajani. He's in for Ryan Ugly. Tyler Milner's behind the glass. I'm Clint Sterner. You're listening to Sports Radio 610. Can I tell y'all, I had a little back and forth the other day on social media, and this has been irking me for a while with this generation. I tell you what I did. I saw a video of some 7-on-7 high school footballers.
Mm-hmm.
And a kid caught a touchdown, and I guess there's a thing in high school football now, and these young kids where they run by whoever they beat on that play, the defensive back they beat, and they tap them on the top of the head or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what's going on, but that old boy, the DB got beat, the receiver got up, tapped him on top of the head, and old boy got up and just cleaned his clock.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And I look at it. And sure, I'm disgusted when I see anything like that in general, right? But I start looking at the comments. The amount of people that are beside themselves because the kid, the DB that got beat.
Retaliated
and knocked the hell out of this kid. I am shocked how many people will overlook the way that these kids, and then look at some of us grown men do nowadays, with stuff like that. If you tap another man on the head, I don't care if you're competing or not, if you tap another man on the head, or the other one was a couple of days ago, I'm watching the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Dallas Cowboy game. Mm-hmm. And the Dallas Cowboy, the guy that's always talking trash, real physical DB, I can't think of his name right now, but he runs up after the game. Or it's when it was already over. I don't know if the clock had actually expired. But he runs by George Pickens and jumps in his face to where it looks like they hit face mask. Well, before he gets away, George Pickens grabs his face mask and kind of just slings him down.
Yeah.
And everybody's talking about how George Pickens sucker punched him. George Pickens shouldn't have done that. I'm thinking, what happened to the days of where if you put your hands on another man, there's a chance you might get your
ass? Yeah, you better be ready for it.
If you run by somebody and talk trash and you jump in their face to where our face mask hit, like whatever comes next is on that dude. I am shocked at how many people are in the comments and how many people in today's world immediately go to the guy that reacted instead of the idiot that
I mean, I can see it, though, right? I mean, because as a coach, you know, aren't you, like, you would ask D'Amico this, and he'd tell you the same dang thing. Like, hey, man, you know, the second you throw a punch, you're out of the game. Like, well, he's already had to kind of go through that this year with Azeez Al-Shaair. Now, he threw a punch, didn't get ejected at the time, but he certainly got a fine. Very well could have been ejected, or rather suspended, for, you know, throwing a punch
but
at a guy.
But that's a perfect...
Don't react. Like, even if something happens to you, you can't react because you've got to protect the team, right?
Turn the other cheek.
I agree with the training people to not react. I'm not opposed to that. I'm not opposed to that being an everyday focal point when you're dealing with a team or you're playing contact sports and like I'm not opposed to that. But the Azeez Al-Shaair, I ain't got one problem with him standing up and punching somebody. The problem is when an opponent goes to a sideline, like it doesn't just happen when you hit the quarterback. Let's be honest. I'm watching college ball last weekend and I can't remember what quarterback it was. No, it was pro ball. Can't remember what quarterback it was. He went to the sideline and kind of got tackled on the opposing team's sideline. He got pushed four or five times just trying to get back on the field.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like if you're going to run to a guy like that and get in his face,
yeah,
there's a chance you're going to get popped. You're going to get dealt with. Like, to me, it's just, again, I'm not worried about the kid or the action. Like, I understand people do stupid stuff in the moment, whatever, whatever. I'm shocked at people that watch it from the outside and go, well, God, that was a cheap shot. No, it was an idiot that triggered the cheap
shot. Well, there's the trigger, and that has to be talked about, too. But, like, I always, without knowing more context about it, because there was probably plenty of talking going on in the 7-on-7 situation.
Oh, yeah,
but, like,
is.
You know, the DB that is going to retaliate after being tapped on the head and after getting worked on a route in a touchdown.
Yeah, but you ain't tapping me on the head.
Don't tap me on the head, but you know what? I can't sucker punch you. I can't push you, and I can't put myself and my team in peril where I'm not available. Like, especially at that age. Like, you know, when you get to the pro level, like, there's only so much you can do. We see it on the week in and week out basis. Guys, you know, reacting. And even they, after the fact, know they're not supposed to. And ultimately, look, sometimes when you're not very deep at those positions, particularly, like the last thing I need to have happen this week in New England is Derek Stingley to kind of get done over, tapped on the head, and then he retaliate. Yeah. And now what are you down to as a corner?
I'd actually respect him more. I can't take the team approach with all this. I understand what you're talking about, but I can't take it. Not when they're going overboard, showing you up, physically touching you, getting in your face. Like the good old days of if you do that, you better be ready to handle whatever it triggers, whatever kind of pushback you get. Those days are obviously behind.
I just know this. If anybody out there listening ready to test Clint Sterner, I mean, don't try him in the bar because he's going to tell somebody to hold his beer.
Hey, look,
coming after your ass.
I'm not trying to be a tough ass. I may get whooped, but, man, if you come up and put your hands on another man, there's a really good chance that something's going to happen.
Yep,
I mean, it just drives me nuts. And parents, a lot of it's parents. Like, I'm just like, what are we doing here? All right, the Texans, they got the New England Patriots this weekend, man. We got some keys to victory, if you will. What's the one thing that the Texans absolutely have to do this weekend in order to get out of New England with a win and take care of business? We'll talk about that next right here on Sports Radio 610.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Big City Wings in Humble, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Ron Hughley is out. Sean Bajani is in. You're going to get a heavy dose of Sean Bajani today, 2 to 6. And then what time y'all kick off tonight? Y'all always
10. Yeah, we're 10 to midnight every Friday.
10 is it every Friday?
Every Friday,
I guess,
baby.
It's Thursday nights when football and all that job's going on.
Yeah, we're off on Monday and Thursdays.
Gotcha. So you can get you a good 6-hour dose. Well, I guess you can't now because we're 2.5 hours in, but you can get you a couple more hours here, and then you get a couple more hours 10 to midnight tonight if you want a little more Sean Bajani. The cool. Texans –
Glad you reminded me.
Yeah, right. You got a little more work to do, Chief. The Texans, they head north, baby. They got the New England Patriots on Sunday. I think I heard John McClain last night on Texans All Access. I think I heard him talking about the Texans have never won in New England.
0-7.
0-7. Good gosh. So this would be another reason why you need to go and take care of business and get this victory. Keys to a victory here, and I don't need four or five of them. I just want to talk about each one of us, one big key to this victory, the most important thing. And this is a game where the Texans are favored by a touchdown. I know not exactly, but they're favored by a touchdown, and this is a game where most folks that watch the NFL game closely believe the Texans should go up and really should win this thing by double digits. But Sean, in your opinion, the biggest key to the Texans going up there and taking care of business this week?
I don't think it can be anything other than getting after the quarterback in a big-time way.
Okay.
And I say that for a couple of reasons. One, what was it, week two? Texans played Caleb Williams and the Bears. Week two, week three, one of those.
Week two.
You went after and you sacked Caleb Williams seven times. You made him turn the ball over twice.
They pressured Caleb Williams so many times they had next-gen stats confused.
That was the game in which Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter combined for 17 pressures on Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
I know B. Scott wants it, and you know what? He damn sure better get it and should get it on Sunday. Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson's name being called a lot. They should be filling up the stat sheet. I have to believe that, not just because it's a rookie quarterback, but the Patriots' offensive line just lost their starting center a couple of weeks ago. They're on their fifth different iteration of a starting offensive line. With this pass rush that is generating a pressure 42% of the time against an offensive line that is almost allowing 50% of the time pressures on their quarterback, all right, come on, man. At some point in time, the Texans have got to do what they're supposed to do. Like, they were supposed to be able to beat a legitimate AFC contender, and they did that last week against the Bills. But in terms of, like, you know, the games within the game, you want to see position groups dominate specifically where they should. You want to see Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson and that pass rush flash. They should absolutely do that. I mean, any way you draw it up, it should happen. If the Texans are a touchdown favorite, I would put like that Texan D line against the Patriots offensive line as like a double digit point favorite, if that makes any sense. Like, they should hammer those guys.
I like it. I think there's I think that would make me feel really good. But I'm talking about the key to go up there and assure a victory.
Mm-hmm.
And I just look at this matchup, and it is a huge advantage, Houston, obviously. And the only way for me, Sean, that the New England Patriots even stay in the game is if the Texans can't stop the run.
Good point, but Ramondre Stevenson is out officially on the injury report this week, and
they should. There's no doubt they're obviously beat up. But here's the deal is. I think the Colts vacated the run, particularly the inside run, a little bit too early. Now, the Texans were in control of that in the second half, but I still think they wish they'd have done things differently early on. The Bears had no chance. The Minnesota Vikings did whatever the hell they wanted to do. The Jacksonville Jaguars are as dysfunctional as you can find. I love Doug Peterson. I like Trevor Lawrence. I don't know what the hell's going on, but they just can't get it done.
Mm-hmm.
They've just last week, I think inside, Josh Allen and Cook were able to cook a little bit, especially early on, and in the third quarter when they were able to score 14 points. So,
right,
I think it's where the Texans are susceptible. I think there's still the jury's still out on interior wise between the tackles downhill. Can this team for four quarters stop the run? And the New England Patriots won. That's really the only choice they have offensively. They're going to do it because it's what they want to do. They're going to do They're going to do it because it's protecting a young quarterback. They're not going to quit on the run.
That's going to be
interesting
to watch.
They're not going to vacate the run.
Look, I know you sometimes have to take it, you know, as coach speak, and there's the gamesmanship element, you know, in a given week before you're about to play an opponent, but. Listen, man, but the way that both sides have talked up Drake May this week, from the Texans' respect of him to what, you know, Gerard Mayo has, said about Drake May, that, hey, look, this is not just an effort to kind of make a change because we have to. Like, Jacoby Brissett ain't it. Like, they believe this guy's, like, ready to be a factor and to help them, play better football. And they have to play better football. They're averaging less than 13 points per game. Their offensive pass game is almost non-existent. They've got to be able to do it. And on a day in which Ramondre Stevenson, their leading rusher, who's averaging 4.6 yards per attempt, is not going to be available for you, you've got Antonio Gibson and then everybody else. Basically what the Houston Texans have gotten the last few weeks with no Damian Pierce and no Joe Mixon. They can't go into this game, the Patriots can't, and say, all right, we're going to protect our quarterback and just run the hell out of the ball, in which we've proven outside of Ramondre Stevenson, they can't really.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm looking at Drake May to maybe be a little bit more of a factor than maybe a lot of people are anticipating.
Well, I'm sure they're going to try that, but at the end of the day, if I don't care who's healthy, who's not. At the end of the day, if the Texans don't allow the New England Patriots to run the football, mm-hmm. and they force him to put the ball in the hands of Drake May, then this is going to be a landslide Texans win. The only way that this thing is even remotely close and interesting in the fourth quarter is if they find a way. Again, I don't care who it is. If they find a way to run the football, great point, because if they're able to run the football, guess what that's going to do? That's going to give Drake May the opportunity through a very clear quarterback lens to hit him with that play action and make a big throw over the top.
Yeah.
Or make two or three throws at the right time, and the game's all of a sudden interesting. They should put their foot on their throat in the first half and walk away with it in second. And if they don't stop the run, they're going to have a hard time doing it.
I'll even give you another one, because where you went with that, the Texans are amongst the worst teams in the NFL in tackling, in giving up yards after contact. I think they're 11th worst. So making that initial play is going to be huge. Yeah. And look, coming into Sunday, you should have a healthy Aziz Alshire. Henry Toa's been good.
Great.
Okay. Yeah. And again, like I said, we know what Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, and this defensive line have been in terms, at times, of stuffing the run. You get that on a consistent basis, and you get after Drake May. I think across the board, we should see the most complete game to date from this Texans football team.
I like where your head's at. That's Sean Bajani. I'm Clint Sterner. Tyler Milner's back in the studio on the ones and twos. You're listening to Sports Radio 610, Houston's sports leader. Thursday night football was a hell of a football game. San Francisco 49ers 36, Seattle Seahawks 24. I watch every NFL game that I watch through a Texans lens. What did last night tell us, good, bad, or indifferent, about these Texans? San Francisco 49ers, that's pretty close to what you're shooting for now. And we'll cuss and discuss that Thursday night football game through that Texans lens. We'll do that next right here on Sports Radio 610.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Big City Wings in Humble, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Yeah, it is. Ron Hughley is out. Sean Bajani is in, and just gave away another set of tickets. U of H, Utah.
How cool is that, by the way? The show of humanity that we just
had. It's still alive. Byron Godfrey. Huh? Yeah, good deal, man. He's a good man, always good, always comes out and hangs with us.
Yeah,
it's good deal, man. Thursday night football. I mean, did you watch game last night, Sean?
I did.
Okay.
For the first Thursday night game I've been able to watch since they've been on this Amazon Prime mess.
Okay.
I forgot I signed up for a 30-day Amazon Prime deal that is going to expire like this weekend, and I remembered last night that I had it. I was like, I wonder if I can watch the games on it. So I signed in on the TV, and sure enough, it pulled up, and I was like, whoa, I can watch the game. So I was very happy. Me and my boy were very happy that we could watch football last night.
Yeah, I don't know why, because those are kind of two teams for me. I mean, I like watching the 49ers, and again, I love watching the 49ers through my Texans lens, which is in this business. And being the football mind, it's hard for me not to watch college football through the Arkansas lens and then watch pro football through the Texans lens. It's almost annoying, if I'm being honest. Like, every game I watch, I'm like, man, the Texans, they beat the hell out of this team. Or, man, the Texans can't do that. Or, man, this is what I really wish the Texans could do.
Yeah.
The 49ers are one of those teams for me. The 49ers are one of those teams. And they wasn't a perfect game by any stretch of the imagination last night. But they did go to Seattle, a very difficult place to play. A good football team. What is Seattle? They're 3-3 now? They're 3-2 at the time?
3-3, yep.
They're 3-3 now. And San Francisco was in a need-to-win situation.
They were 2-3, yeah. And Bosa even said this week, leading up to that game, that they should feel the pressure.
Yeah, they needed a win to get back to 500 and get back right. And San Francisco goes in there and handles their business. They score 36 points, 36-24. And you and I were talking about it a little earlier, and it's one of those things where you just when you're doing a radio show with somebody and you both kind of inadvertently go, you know, I'm watching that game last night, and I had some thoughts, and I'm watching this thing through the Texans lens. You go, all right, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it on air. And so as you're watching this game unfold last night, you got your Texans glasses on, and what was it that turned you on?
It was just the run game by the San Francisco 49ers in – what they've been able to accomplish. I thought about it last night after just watching them get basically whatever they wanted on the ground at any point in time. I mean, the numbers last night for that 49ers team that put up damn near 40 points last night, 36, you said, they ran it 33 times for 228 yards. The best production that they've had all season long. And every other game prior to last night, they've still been able to basically do what any other team in the NFL with any semblance of a run game wishes they could do. 33 carries, 228 yards, 6.9 yards per carry last night in that 36-24 win. So I went back and I looked at all the numbers, and they're just all really good. I'll just give you the yards per carry. 4.7 against the Jets, 4.1 against the Vikings, 4 yards per carry against the Rams, 4.6 against the Patriots. That was just 3 weeks ago. Last weekend against the Arizona Cardinals, 5.9 yards per carry. How are they doing this without Christian McCaffrey? And now they may have to do this without their backup running back, who got injured last night, has a shoulder situation, Jordan Mason. So now it's going to be a fourth-rounder, Isaac Guerrero, who's going to be getting the rock unless they decide to do something else, you know, in the running back position. But the 49ers, being a 3-3 football team, a lot of things struck me. Here they are, a team that has Mr. Irrelevant, a guy in Brock Purdy who was very much a part of the MVP conversation for a good bit last regular season. And they had Christian McCaffrey come off of a career year, but now they don't have McCaffrey. They still got Purdy, and this is a 3-3 football team. How are they doing this? Why aren't the Texans, who have a superior quarterback, an extremely talented and deep receiver core, though we'll see just how deep, obviously, this weekend against the Patriots and in the next month. But, I mean, they check all the boxes. Good defense, good head coach, good offense, good receiver core. You got the running back. But with no Joe Mixon, no Damian Pierce, and you're hoping to get the very best you possibly can out of Cam Akers, you know, who's barely got a half of Achilles left on him.
Yeah.
You know, after having two injuries in the last 3 years with it. Darian Gumbawale, like, the Texans can't run the ball to save their life. But this is a 4-1 football team with Super Bowl aspirations. What are we doing here? Like, my question is, where are the Texans and Bobby Slowik falling short in this iteration of the Shanahan offense? Why are the Texans struggling so dang much at running the football? Is it as simple as the offensive line construction in that Laremy Tunsil, Titus Howard, and Kenyon Green were all inherited by Bobby Slowik in this brand of offense, and the only guys that they've been able to go out and get and hand pick to be fits, well, you can only play really one of them or two of them. They went out and got Shaq Mason. They went out and got drafted Juice Scruggs, drafted Jarrett Patterson. But that's it. Like, you can only play two out of those three guys. Like, is it really just the offensive line? Is it the running back? Like, I don't know what it is.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's not one position, but it's an overall lack of physicality. It's an overall level of willingness to be soft in a man's game. And this 49ers are the exact opposite. You look at from Trent Williams all the way across their offensive line. You're not playing offensive line with Trent Williams and not being held accountable if you're soft. You're going to be held accountable. If you look at the tight end George Kittle, you look at Juszczyk, the fullback. Juwan Jennings, a wide receiver, that the only reason that – not the only reason, but the main reason, like every time somebody asks a question about him, mm-hmm. it's how physical he is in the blocking game as a wide receiver. It's just in their DNA in San Francisco. You're not going to be in that room and be soft.
Yeah.
And there is just – I am out on Dalton Schultz right now because of the level of softness that I saw last week. And it's been an ongoing story other than the penalties with Laremy Tunsil. And you know, I'll argue that when your highest paid guy and your captain is one of your offensive linemen and they don't even want to practice.
Yeah,
Laremy Tunsil. Like that whole thing is wild to me, man. And I just think that this is the one part where I feel like D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick are making a huge mistake. Because you're either coaching it or you're allowing it.
Dang it, Bobby.
Yeah. You're either coaching it or you're allowing
maybe
it.
Maybe a little bit of both. But
yeah.
The physicality, I can totally get behind that. I've seen the same thing that you have.
Yeah.
With the exception of one person. Like, I didn't hear you kill Dalton Schultz the other day, but I heard about it, okay? And you mentioned it a couple of times today, again, right now. I need to pay better attention to this because multiple times this year I've lauded Dalton Schultz and Cade Stover for their ability to make an important block in a good run, yeah. Okay? But I think what I'm doing here is I'm ignoring in victory, so to speak, yeah. I'm ignoring in these good runs what I – would not and am not in these poor runs, which there are far more non-productive runs for the Texans.
Just go watch the first drive where they for some reason felt the need to give Dari Agunbowale the ball twice in runs and once in a screen. I mean, just watch the effort. Like, forget the outcome of the play. Just watch the effort. The willingness to quit blows my mind.
Well, you talk about that, like not sticking with it, not finding a hat to put somebody.
I've never been around a coach in football on either side of it. And the interesting thing is that D'Amico preaches certain things about his defense that his offense isn't anywhere close to doing. That's the interesting dynamic here is like most coaches preach, most good coaches preach strain. And what strain means is whether you're in perfect position or not, don't quit.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Whether it's the first quarter or the fourth quarter and you feel 100% or you feel banged up, don't quit. Whether the ball's coming to you or away from you, hit somebody, eliminate somebody from the play. Strain, strain, strain. And there is very little of that on this offense. And that's football 101.
You know what I'm thinking of? D'Amico, I don't think, would ever say it, but there is a former player, a former defensive player that is a head coach that absolutely said it 2 weeks ago, and it hadn't worked out very well for him. Antonio Pierce.
Oh, yeah.
Guys are making business decisions.
Well, I don't think that's the case.
Well,
I just think there's
what's the difference, Clint? Like, if you're not straining, if you're not continuing and staying on the play, but you're not doing that, you're giving up on a play halfway, what is that?
Well, there's a difference in, hey, this game's over in the fourth quarter, and we're mailing it in, and I'm not going to stick my head in there because it ain't working. We're not going to win, so it ain't worth me getting hurt.
Or I'm not going to climb up to the second level and try to, shed this guy because my ankle hurts.
I'm talking about in the first play of the game, a linebacker beats me across my face, and I just kind of almost am confused with it and just put two hands on him and turn around like, what happened? Instead of pushing, like from jump.
Oh, my God.
There is, and again, like I said, you're either coaching it or you're allowing it, and it's we're on the verge of like it, to me, it appears that it's being allowed. If I see Dalton Schultz in the fullback position, like I'm not saying he's another guy like Laremy Tunsil where they just got a contract and there's like I know you're not going to bench me, and so I can afford to do this kind of soft, lackadaisical stuff when things aren't just right for me, right? But there's no way that D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick ain't watching the same film I'm watching. If he is in a fullback position leading up on run plays this week, leading up on linebackers on run plays this week, then I'm going to lose my mind.
Schultz?
Yep. There's no D'Amico Ryans.
What else can they do?
D'Amico Ryans, put. You mentioned the guy Cade Stover. He should be in that position.
Yeah,
that's it. He should be in that position. Period. Back to I mean, we get off. You get me off in that Schultz rabbit hole, boy. I'll be heated here.
I think it's fascinating because you've seen something different than I have, and now I'm going to go pay attention, closer attention to it.
Watch it. Watch his last game and watch him every snap. It won't take you long. You'll be able to count 15 snaps where it's just like what. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, you're trying to avoid people. You're not even trying to look somebody up to hit. Like, when you're playing football, when you're playing the game of football, if you are a decoy front side and you know the run's going backside, let's say Tank Dell's going to catch a flip on the end around, and I'm a decoy on the front side, and there's three defenders over there, my man will bob and weave them.
Instead of putting a friggin' hat right through his
chest. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, or burst the sideline and turn the corner like you got the ball, try to get one of them to chase you.
Yeah.
Or how about you get a cheap shot, hit one of them right in the chin, and let them know, hey, we're a physical football team. Mm-hmm. And I don't care where you're at. We're gonna catch you sleeping. Mm-hmm. There's none of that.
And yeah. It's just, well, you know, that level of nasty, hopefully it's contagious. Yeah.
It's contagious the wrong direction.
Well,
that's the problem.
I watched Will Anderson take somebody's shoulder pads and shove them right through their throat last week.
That's the deal, though, right? Is on the defensive side of the football, it's not a problem. That's what's crazy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Is how does Will Anderson, they watch the same film we watch.
Yeah.
How do they watch that film and not go, what the hell's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Y'all kidding me with that?
Sure. But you can't believe that they don't see the same thing that we're all seeing, okay? You obviously watch the game a lot closer than other people. Most people, even myself, looking for a particular thing, you're not watching it any closer than Bobby Slowick or D'Amico.
Go back and watch.
They're seeing it, but I think you're right. You know, do they feel like their hands are tied to a certain degree?
Well, there's a certain level, Sean, of we're 4-1. Let's not rock the boat with some. Because you clearly hadn't been holding them accountable to date, so it's not like it's something that you're instilling in your offense is physicality.
Yeah.
You're not doing it.
Yeah,
you're either coaching it or you're allowing it or both. We'll see what happens. All right, the Texans. The Friday injury report is out. Also, as Sean mentioned a little earlier, the New England Patriots injury report is out as well. So we'll talk a little bit about injury reports next. Who's in? Who's out for the Texans and for the New England Patriots?